Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
It's Mentally Yours from Ellen and Yvette. A focus on your mental health, you surely won't regret. It's mentally yours.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Mentally Yours, Metro.co.uk's weekly mental health podcast. I'm Yvette, and today we're talking to Samantha Fitzgibbons. She's a copywriter and author. We're going to be chatting about anxiety, anorexia, and her new novel, Happy State. We're here to chat to you about mental health stuff, obviously, and also your new novel, Happy State. What made you want to write this book?
Well, it's been a long time coming. I would say going back to the age of 13, to be honest with you, Yvette. There's no straightforward answer to that question. It's very convoluted. It's numerous years of sort of pent up stress, frustration, feeling like I've not received treatment for something that is a very, very real problem. It's been undermined. This is in no way to knock any kind of, I don't want to knock any authorities. I'd never knock the National Health Service. We're so incredibly blessed. It's just that it's so spoken about, of course, but that stigma around mental health, it's still got so far to go. And I know my journey personally was very private, very, very private. So I had to do a lot of work myself. Myself and my mum had to do most of it. And the trigger for Happy State was one day coming home and having seen a mental health practitioner. And I'd got debilitating anxiety at the time, and I'd sat there and I'd chatted to them about it, and I was told to do this checklist, and they asked questions such as, over the last 2 weeks, have you felt this, that and the other? And it was literally a checkbox. I mean, that in itself is absurd, because there's so many grey areas, you can't just tick a box. And I just remember sitting there thinking, this is absolutely ridiculous. And so, unfortunately, because I hadn't sort of felt suicidal in the last 2 weeks, or because I hadn't felt like I couldn't cope in the last 2 weeks, I didn't qualify for treatment. Excuse me. And I was actually told to go home and Google mindfulness, and that might help. And I just came home, and I remember saying to my husband, feeling utterly deflated, I said, you know what, it's almost like mental health is just being wiped out. It's like they're trying to just do so little that they're trying to just eradicate it and wipe it out and pretend that we don't exist. and just have this purest race. I mean, obviously, I went to an extreme with my thinking there, but at that moment, that's how it felt. And I just remember thinking there's a book in there about a government that just decide to wipe out mental illness. And it's how it felt at the time. And like I said, it's extremely, it's, you know, going to one extreme, isn't it? Of course it is. But yeah, that's how I felt at the time.
Can you tell us a little bit about how mental illness and mental health kind of manifests for you? Like, what is anxiety like for you?
Anxiety for me, it's changed throughout my life. I mean, what started out as an eating disorder, what I can honestly say is when I had the eating disorder at the age of 13, I wasn't anxious at that time. I actually had never felt so in control of my life and my mind. I probably had never felt better. The irony of that, having such a severe illness, but feeling so incredibly powerful. The anxiety kicked in when it became recognised that there was an issue and that I had to start having, I say treatment very loosely, I didn't receive any treatment because unfortunately I was told that I wasn't thin enough. So something that I've recently found out is still very much the case all those years later, and that's still a problem. So yeah, I wasn't thin enough. I was 6 stone max, but I wasn't thin enough. There was anxiety then when I realised that I had to make changes. That became a debilitating anxiety. At the time, I remember it was a feeling of having no control whatsoever over my life, feeling that probably that I couldn't continue for too much longer with that feeling of just having no control. Jump to years later, when I have more of a handle on the eating disorder, but I go into acting, and there's the whole pressure of how you look. Of it's not so much about your talent, it's about what you look like. There, you know, we open up a whole different anxiety. I'm not thin enough, I'm not attractive enough, I'm not this enough, I better dye my hair, I better lose some more weight. And so the anxiety then probably reached an all-time high whereby I was a dithering mess. I couldn't leave the house, I was shaking, I was depressed. And I mean, that was absolutely hideous, to be quite honest. And then, yeah, and then years later, I sort of came through that. And now I'm going into sort of a period of perimenopause, oh joy. And that brings back a whole, you know, that triggers a whole new anxiety as well of essentially, what if I gain weight? Because everywhere I look, it's all menopause. You'll probably put weight on. That's a huge stress. And that's sort of, again, making me feel like, although I feel in control at the moment, I'm scared that I'm going to lose control and not know how to deal with things, I suppose.
I think a lot of listeners will have really related to what you've said in there about, you know, you go to the doctor, but you're maybe, well, they sort of almost imply that you're not ill enough, because it does feel like that sometimes with the NHS. They'll deal with people in crisis, but there's maybe not so much that they can do if you're like you say, you're sort of, well, not ill enough, not a sort of a threat to yourself or other people. And I know we've had Hope Virgo on the podcast before talking about her Dump the Scales campaign, because unfortunately that is the case with eating disorders. It is still incredibly old-fashioned and based on a certain number rather than actually the things behind eating disorders. What things have you found actually helpful in terms of managing your mental health? And have you had any help from the NHS, or have you sort of maybe turned to charities or alternative therapies? What have you found helpful?
I have turned to private therapy, which wasn't ideal, because I would much rather utilise the NHS, because, you know, there's a mental health unit everywhere. So, that was always what I wanted to do. But unfortunately, because I never qualified, it wasn't really an option. So yeah, I've ended up throughout my life, I've seen different private practitioners, from CBT therapists to psychotherapists to psychologists. Particularly the eating disorder side of things is very, very difficult. I mean, having sort of got that bit older now and being well into my 40s, I definitely have more of a handle on it, and I don't believe it ever leaves you entirely, but I have a much healthier handle on things. However, my concern for people nowadays is social media, having all of these images thrown at you. I know personally that as a way of getting through, we all have bad days still, of course we do. And I know that if I'm, you know, feeling a bit hormonal and feeling like I'm having a fat day, which certain people look at me because I am, I know I'm slim, and they say, God, don't be ridiculous, but they'll never understand what's going on in the mind. Obviously, I wouldn't expect them to. I have to completely take myself away from social media, and I recommend that to everybody. I feel so sorry for young people these days that are absolutely inundated. They have to be on social media because it's what their peers are doing. If they're not there, they're probably left out of some sort of loop, and I guess it's not really an option. I know that my eating disorder was going back to sort of the early 90s when there wasn't any of that, but it still existed very much. So clearly there was some sort of trigger with mine, but I mean, I compare that to nowadays, and I just think, I don't know how society can balance kids being inundated, adults even being inundated with all these completely unrealistic images, but at the same time trying to treat them when there's very limited resources. Therapy is absolutely essential, but I do believe it's about finding the right thing for you. Things like cognitive behavioural therapy are massive. People swear by it. For me personally, didn't really work too well. And that's not to knock it. It just wasn't my thing. What works for me is writing things down and, bizarrely, doing it very much in a third person. So writing about how I feel as though I'm talking about somebody else. And you get this incredible insight into what you or this other person are feeling and thinking. And it's such an, it's a really, really interesting strategy, because you're writing about yourself, but from a completely different perspective. And you get this sort of urge, if you like, to sort of nurture this inner child that you're reading about, that's actually yourself. It sounds more convoluted than it really is. It just encourages you to sort of self-reflect. And I did this purely by accident one day, and I actually started to feel quite emotional about myself, and I found it a really useful strategy to help with any kind of obstacles in terms of mental illness, I guess.
How did writing Happy State, which is obviously fiction, play into that? Did you find it cathartic?
I found it incredibly cathartic, yeah. Because over the years, I'd built up so many feelings and so much frustration that my protagonist, my female, she could just play that all out. Just this absolute frustration. Obviously, a lot of the characters in the book don't really know what's going on. They're just aware that this new government have come in and declared a broken United Kingdom a happy state, whereby we will be sort of prioritising the well-being of our population. So to many people, they think, God, this is great. To a lot of people, they're thinking, yeah, right, like we believe. That's going to sort of play out the way you say it is. And it does actually turn out that they're trying to wipe out mental illness. So I really got to sort of get right down to grips with all the frustrations I had, I suppose. And the sort of one of the main characters who's sort of the commander in chief of the of martial law of the army, he's this absolute he's sort of the villain of the book, if you like, and he's the one that doesn't believe in mental illness. He's the one that's the catalyst for this change. He's been in the military. He thinks that it's a sign of weakness. He thinks people that fall down to PTSD are weak, they're pathetic. he doesn't agree with the mopers in society that are dragging everybody down, that drain the NHS of loads of resources unnecessarily. He had a mom, his backstory, his mom had schizophrenia, and he watched her just take all this money from society and do nothing to help herself. And so he's got this feel that it's useless, it's pathetic, it's just an excuse for being weak and useless. So I suppose in some ways that was a reflection of how I felt I was being treated, but taken to an extreme, of course. I don't believe any mental health practitioner ever actually thought that. But I just got to play with that and take it to an absolute extreme.
What kind of response have you had to the book so far?
I've had a great response. I'm so, so grateful. One of the main things that I've had, when you write a book, you've got so many concerns, largely one of them being, I hope they don't think that I've written it, like that my writing is just really shit, basically. I hope that they just don't sort of go, God, she's crap, isn't she? She can't write. I suppose that's very vain. You think that more than anything else, really. And I've had some wonderful compliments about the writing, but more importantly, I guess, people have come back and said, love the way you've tackled mental health. I can relate to that feeling. I, too, have been in that situation where I felt like I'm just, they're trying to just almost wipe me out, block me out, you know, just, oh, we'll just ignore her, pretend she doesn't exist. Largely a female audience, I'm not going to lie, it's been mainly females that have come back to me, but a lot of them have said it's really made them stop and think about a society where mental illness is prosecutable, I guess. So yeah, I've had a really great response, and that has been, you know, to know that you're dealing, to have people say to you that you're dealing with mental health both responsibly and delicately is such a compliment, because you know it's a very difficult world nowadays. It's hard to get things right without offending someone. So yeah, so far really pleased. There's still time for, you know, things to change, but so far I'm really happy. Yeah,
cool. And what are you working on next?
Next, the plan is for Happy State to go into a sequel, and possibly a third book as well. But I've had this sort of crazy idea. I really want to do a thriller. Thrillers have always been my favourite thing. With short stories, I've always gone for thrillers. And I'm thinking of tackling UK gangs, knife crime, and possibly a home invasion. You know, I'm trying to sort of, I try to be sort of quite current in terms of, you know, looking at things that are happening right now, mental health, obviously, in Happy State. And I find myself reading at the moment that there just seem to be a lot of stories about gang related crimes in the UK, which is absolutely terrifying, obviously. And home invasions, you know, they're so terrifying. And for a short while, I remember my mind was really taken up with hearing about a lot of them. And I became, I've sort of a bit locked in with it, and I got myself into quite a panic about it all. And I thought recently, I thought, you know what, I think I'm going to purge it like I did with Happy State. I might purge it into a book. And it's so incredibly cathartic, as you said earlier. It's a great way of, that's what people should do when they need therapy, write a book. Seriously, it's wonderful therapy, and it doesn't cost you anything.
Goodbye from mentally yours. So go away, enjoy your day, get on with all your chores. From mentally yours.
If you've been affected by any of the issues we've been chatting about today, please give the Samaritans a ring on 116 123.
If you've enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review and subscribe to our channel, and perhaps even go back and listen to some old episodes. We have many of them.
Also, you can get in contact with us. We have a lovely Facebook group, which is called Mentally Yours, and we're also on Twitter at MentallyYRS.
See you next week.
Hold up. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.